Are you interested in angels, demons, spirits, ghosts, and monsters? Are you curious about their origins, tales, and influence upon history and on the present day? If so, sit back, relax, and welcome to Southern Demonology, the podcast that explores all of this and more. Hello all, welcome back to another episode of Southern Demonology, and as always, I'm your host, JJ. Well, this episode should be dropping on Christmas Eve, so I want to wish everyone out there a very happy holidays. I hopefully actually will have another episode coming out on New Year's Eve, so I would say that I wish you a happy New Year's as well, but hopefully I will be able to speak to you before that happens, believe it or not. I know, regular schedules, is this really Southern Demonology? The answer is yes. Yes, it is. Anyway, I hope that the holiday season is treating everyone very well. I have a very special gift for you. I wish it was something that is physical and could be mailed out, but rather it is an auditory one. We have a very special guest today whose name is Christy. She's a fellow academic. She has studied a variety of different things. She has went on archaeological digs. She has studied the Mendaeans and John the Baptist. But what I really wanted to get her on here to discuss today are Aramaic incantation bowls. Now, I have been to quite a few museums, and I have always seen a few examples of these, and I was first introduced to them as water bowls, but Christy has rightfully informed me that it really should be incantation bowls as the official designation, but they are fascinating, and once you hear her describe some more details around them, I think that you will find them even more so than just what the name implies. Their promise is not only met, it is exceeded. So I hope you take a listen. It's going to be a really good time. Christy and I actually had a very long conversation, so I will be chopping this up into two parts. So this is going to be part one. I really hope you enjoy it. And at the very end, I will come back with a little bit more information. But otherwise, please sit back, relax, and enjoy. Hello, all. I have a distinct pleasure of having Christy on the podcast. We met during a podcast exchange. She reached out to me saying, hey, I'd be happy to come on. And ever since then, she has become my best nerd friend, has some serious academic chops, and I am really excited for all of y'all to get to meet her as well. Christy, hey, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. You're going to make me blush and sort of, you know, I don't know, my ego is going to just be insufferable now.
But, well, you know, I'm always known for making people insufferable because I know myself. So anyway, but anyway, Christy, why don't you give kind of, if you don't mind, a brief overview of how you got into the field, some of the subjects that you kind of specialize in, because we are in very similar academic study paths, and it's always interesting to meet people that have gotten interested by similar topics as me. So
sure. So actually, I'd always sort of been interested in archaeology. Like when I was a kid, I was like, I'm gonna be a paleontologist and I'm gonna be an Egyptologist. And then I got really into choir. And I was originally a vocal major in college. And I was also a very devout Southern Baptist. And I was living in Mesa, Arizona at the time. And there was a gentleman that was teaching a class on Christian origins. His name is Shoemaker. He's great. As far as I know, he's still teaching. He's awesome, highly recommended. But I took the class because I thought, you know, hey, you know, if I'm going to live my life by this, then I should probably learn more about it. That's not Sunday school. And I had a crisis of faith. And we had spoken about this previously, but it was some years and I was very angry about it. And Bart Ehrman, who is a New Testament scholar from Chapel Hill, had a similar issue when he was attending Wheaton College. And he described it as being dragged kicking and screaming from the faith. And I had a very similar sort of like reaction to it. And then I decided that I was going to stop singing and be an archaeologist because I was really interested. And my first dig that I went on was in 2009 to the Mount Zion dig in Israel, sponsored by UNC Charlotte, where I'm now a staff member. And we do love volunteers. And so if you want to come volunteer and dig with us, then plug that. Google Dig Mount Zion. Yeah, and so I went there, and a buddy of mine that I'm still friends with, we were walking to site one morning and at, you know, 4:30 or 5 or something ungodly. And he said, if you're getting into this because you want to learn what you believe, then quit now and go home. And that's the best advice I've ever gotten. Like, because I really was. And he was like, you're not going to find it. You're going to drive yourself crazy. So quit now and go home.
Oh,
And
that is fascinating advice.
yeah. Yeah. And I asked him about it the other day. And he was like, oh my God, did I say that? I'm sorry. And I was like, no, Jonathan, like that's the best advice I've ever gotten, like in this field, period. Like from anybody. And
Like, why do you think that is so especially true? I'm curious to get your take on it, because I've never been on a dig or
yeah.
an archaeological expedition whatsoever.
I mean, like just like within the field of like religious studies, like and a lot of people that go to seminary, it's a known phenomenon that quite a few people that go to seminary will lose the faith and drop out, or they'll, you know, they'll continue because, you know, I'm already more than halfway through or whatever, but you don't come out unscathed a lot of the time. And I think because religion is one of those things that you can't, I mean, there is no inherently proving it, right? Which is why I laugh at my choice of a future occupation, because I'm not going to find out anything until I'm freaking dead, right? I mean, you know, and I'm not knocking people that are devout. Like, that's great, 100%. Like, go for it. But for me, there's too many variables and too much, like, and I was, you know, the Baptists don't like talk about sex and don't like talk about, you know, quantifiable things, I guess is a nicer way to put it. And so just, you need to have more faith. And like, even in high school, when I go to small group, like, I lost count of the times they asked me to have my mom come pick me up. Because I would ask questions about it, you know, I'd ask questions about whatever we're reading or talking about or whatever, because we'd have like a book a semester we'd go through or something. And I'm just like, okay, well, what about this though? And they'd be like, we have to have faith. I'm like, okay, yeah, but my faith isn't the problem, so like just answer my question. And there was no like dogma, there's no not dogma, theology behind it, because, you know, again, like the more evangelical type sects don't have, you know, they don't have the same kind of theology and like method of thinking as like the liturgical sects or like Catholicism, right? There's, and you know, Rick Warren wrote some book that was massively popular even in like the secular community, and it just, it's like, it's kind of like the secret, like, okay, this tells me nothing about nothing, like why am I reading this, like this doesn't tell me anything. And so I didn't get into it necessarily, but I was talking with like the high school pastor or whatever. When I was going to church, I went to church twice a week, sometimes 3 times a week. Like I was really into it. And like we were going back and forth for probably a half an hour. And I could tell he was getting frustrated. And I was like, dude, you know, if you don't know, you can just say that. Like, you know, and now that I think about, you know, as corporeal beings, if there is a God, I term myself a hopeful agnostic at this point. I'm not against it. I would like to think that there's something else. I know that, you know, in my life and by, you know, seeing other people's lives and like reading, you know, random medical literature and whatever, like weird things happen. Like there's stuff that happens that nobody has an explanation for, and that by, you know, by physics shouldn't happen. And so I'm like, okay, like, you know, either we can't understand it right now because we don't have, you know, the science to do so, or like there's something going on. And I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with the not knowing now. I wasn't for a long time. But yeah, so like as corporeal beings, like I've always said, like, so my mom died earlier this year, and like, I still have like the ashes and stuff. And she said that she always wanted to be put in a Folgers jar. And so because she loved drinking Folgers. And my stepsister got like, I think she was like offended by the idea, because I kept saying it. And, you know, because they just gave me like a black box full of like the bags of ashes or whatever. Like, I don't have an urn. I'm not going to keep her around. Like, I don't have a need to, because that's not my mom, you know, wow. Like it's ashes. And, you know, just like I'm rambling a bit. So, you know, a funeral is for the living. Like, whatever happens to the person that's died, they are not concerned with what's going on here anymore, because they are not corporeal any longer. And so as far as religion goes, bringing it back to that, so very long answer to a very short question. As far as religion goes, as corporeal beings, I don't think that we can understand something that goes beyond that, because, you know, like just like, you know, the idea that like God can't talk to people, he has to send angels because like he'll make people's heads explode or whatever was in like dogma. Like, we went through seven atoms before we found that out, right? When Metatron shows up. But yeah. And so like, okay, so, you know, and even Moses like couldn't even look at God. Like, he had to hide his face, as you know, in the crevice of the mountain as God was passing by. Right. And even then, you know, human beings couldn't look upon Moses, like, because he was reflecting God. Like, it was too much. And so as a result, I don't think that it's unreasonable to argue that we can't understand it. Like, it's not possible.
Oh, and yeah. So, I used to have a professor in grad school who always said, if you ever get to be in the presence of God, you are not going to have the best of days.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And like, and so, yeah, so like, I think that's it. And so like, going back to the crux of the question is, you know, why was that good advice? Like, I think that's a great deal of it, is that it's impossible for us to grasp and understand. And there are so many, even just veins of Christianity that aren't even around anymore, much less the one, you know, the tens of thousands that are. Like, if you go looking for something that quote unquote feels right, and you're looking for it, you're going to drive yourself crazy, because you're just going to sit there and be like, well, okay, cool. Well, like, you know, the Mennonites say this, but the Lutherans say that. And, you know, the Gnostics say this, but, you know, then the Catholics say that. Like, okay, like, what are you going to get for it? Like, nothing. You're going to burn yourself out and, you know, and quit, because you just dug yourself a hole, right?
True. Actually, I want to go back and ask you, like, I think it is true that the more that you begin to study these topics, there are things that can trip somebody up. Like, for example, knowing that, you know, there's over, just in the Hebrew Bible alone, there's over 100 hopex legomena, or words that are just used once. And although we think we know what they largely mean, you know, we have definitely lost the nuance to that. Mm-hmm. Or the fact that there are certain rituals, like the whole tribute to Azazel. We've forgotten what that actually means. Mm-hmm. If you start comparing the Hebrew Bible to the Septuaginta, and you see all of these different, you know, variations and things that have been dropped from one and added to another, you know, there's a lot of things that will make someone begin to question at a pretty fundamental level. Do you remember what it was that kind of, you know, caused your crisis of faith, as you put it?
So it's going to sound really dumb.
There are no dumb answers at all.
Yes, there are. I was a TA for 2 years, and there were some really smart kids, and there were some kids that really needed some help. Anyway,
that would be accurate.
So I'd been having some issues with the class anyway. And I mean, not with the class, like it was a great class. It was super cool. Like our final was to, as a class, come up with the Jesus story that people could buy. Like now, like if we came to somebody and was like, this happened, like would someone be like, oh, okay. Like, so like we got rid of like the virgin birth. We got rid of a couple of different things. Like, you know, cause that didn't happen, you know, like it happens with frogs. And actually I read the other day, it's been happening with condors.
That is true. Yeah. With the asexual reproduction.
Yep. With a parthenogenesis. Right. So we were sitting there and we were talking about the New Testament, cause it was about Christian origins. And we were talking about, so we didn't talk about like the Old Testament a super, super lot. Cause again, it's, you know, it's about, you know, first century beliefs and yada, yada until, you know, about 300 when it starts to really codify, right. With like Nicaea and Constantine and all that. So we're talking about Jesus in the New Testament, basically how he's like, he's pretty chill when dealing with these things that people think are a big deal, like sex workers or like, you know, prostitutes, quote unquote, and with the poor and with those that are sick or whatever, like, you know, now it's very stigmatized, all of those things. And, you know, evangelicals, and I'm speaking from my own background, so here's that, you know, like evangelicals, like they don't embody the gospel of James like they should. And like, and correct me if I'm incorrect, but as far as I'm aware, the only imperative that was used in the New Testament was with, in respect to Jesus, was take care of the widows and the children, like take care of the flock, like make sure that people have what they need. And the imperative, like we don't really have it in English, but like we have it in other languages. Mm-hmm. And it's literally a command, right? And so like we were sitting there talking about that, and, you know, and then Mr. Shoemaker was like, okay, so like, what about God in the Old Testament? I'm like, well, he was pissed off all the time. And he would, you know, like, not only like screw y'all, but like screw y'all forever, you know, go nuclear, like salt the ground, like you're done. Like for no reason. I mean, like when Joshua and, you know, the Israelites had crossed over from the wilderness or whatever, like there were people already living there. And God's like, no, but screw them though. Like they didn't do anything wrong. They were just living there. And like this group of randos like just shows up and like, I'm going to take all your shit and like, and kill you and your kid. And I'm going to live in your house. It's going to be great. Like, you know? And so like you're sitting there, and so, you know, and so Mr. Shoemaker was like, you know, how's God in the New Testament? And I said, and nobody said anything. I said, well, he's absent, because he is, because God never shows up in the New Testament, right? It's just Jesus. And then he said, well, how about God in the Old Testament? And I said, well, he tells people to do stuff all the time, or, and, you know, do it or else, right? So not just do it, but do it or else. And he said, well, okay, so how do you interpret that? Like, how do you understand that? And I said, well, how is that different than a kid with an ant farm that's messing around with the farm? Exactly. You know? And so like, that was really, you know, I'd already been having some doubts and some issues. And I know it sounds like a weird place to like have that final nail in the coffin, like that, the crack that, you know, just sort of like turn into a fissure. But that's really where it was. And I don't know why that's what did it, but just like, oh, you know, like being raised, you know, Southern Baptist and all that, you know, and the Southern Baptists love that Jeremiah quote about, you know, I know the hairs in your head and I have plans for you and blah, 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 whatever. And I was like, okay, but, you know, and like the free will thing I always had an issue with, like, you know, well, if God knows what you're going to do, then how do you have free will? Like, you know, and nobody could ever like explain, you know, because again, the Baptists don't really do theology, because you don't have to do anything to be a pastor. And, you know, like, yeah, I don't
in
know.
Fact, that entire concept of, and a lot of Protestant faiths have it, and I'm not knocking anything. I'm not advocating for any particular faith over another, whether it is a sect of Christianity or it is a, an entire different religion. I am completely, neutral on all of that. But I will say that there is no belief that drives me crazier than the one where anybody can just pick up the Bible and read it and completely understand it.
Right?
That
Like
is bullshit. I mean, all
I have
the
like
way through.
five I have five different versions of like annotated Bibles, and then I have an annotated Bible, and then like the actual like that's annotated, but then it has like a companion book to go with it. I think it's a Catholic one like put out by Harvard, I think. But like both of these things are like 2,000 pages long. And exactly, because like you don't know, sorry. You can't understand these things, and like they talk about all these things in the New Testament that harken back, or the Old Testament that are like that foreshadow Jesus or whatever. And like no, I mean, yeah, you can take it that way, and like yes, Jesus was emulating these things, but that's because it's a type, it's a typology, right? Like I'm doing these things to invoke this other thing, just like John the Baptist did a lot of his stuff to invoke Elijah. Like a lot of his things were reminiscent of Elijah specifically. And so like, yes, there are these things, but you're not going to know that by just picking it up, right? Like that's exactly it. Like, and you can't understand like what something meant in like, the Old Testament slash like Hebrew Bible, like however you want to take it, like because you haven't read the Midrash, you haven't read these other, you haven't read anything that, and there was there's some passage in the New Testament where Jesus mentions somebody that was martyred or something, but that was in a text called the Lives of the Prophets that was circulating around that time. But like you don't know that. I mean, it's nothing to you because you've never heard of it. And like, yeah, like it's patently ridiculous. Like you don't get to talk to other people about what this means when really you're just interpreting it for yourself.
Accurate.
Like,
So, but one of the getting back to, I guess, the original topic was you had gotten to study something that has always fascinated me, and that's Aramaic incantation bowls. Can you just give like a summary of what in the hell these things are?
yeah, absolutely. And I got there a weird way too. There's a so first we're let's talk about the bowls. So they're found, they were only made during the like 6th to the 8th century centuries, excuse me. So there's like 200 years of these, and like that's it. There's nothing before
BCE or CE?
CE, CE.
SCE, okay.
And so there's nothing before them that is comparable really. And then like then they stopped when Islam began moving through the area. They're made in Mesopotamia, in Babylon, like Iraq and Iran right now. Usually in like the what we'd consider like the northern portions. But yeah, and so in like as of now, we know of a couple thousand at least that are in private collections or museums, and like there's, I mean, there's more in private collections, but the vast majority of them, unfortunately, don't have any provenance because they've been sold, on the antiquities market or whatever.
Right, which is
And
a
so,
huge problem for most
right,
of artifacts.
yeah, absolutely. Well, and then there, yeah, and then there's a Hobby Lobby thing that they got in trouble for a couple years ago, for buying antiquities, for buying stolen things, because like the IAA will only get you for things that were purchased after like I don't know 75 or something. So it's a pretty short window of time. If you're like, no, I bought this, before then like okay, well, there you have to document it now. There's some kind of documentation process, I assume, but they won't ding you for having something or inheriting something or you whatever. And so so yeah, so there the British Museum has quite a few, and in 2000 or 2001, a few scholars went through and translated all of them and documented things about them. But so These are bowls, and they're quite small. They're about the size of a cereal bowl. So I don't know, like so-ish, mm-hmm. Like a standard cereal bowl. And they're made out of clay. They're just standard use bowls that one you just go to the store and buy. And so it's quite interesting that, you know, these things were used for magical purposes when they weren't sort of like bespoke items. And so what you would do is you go to the market, whatever, buy this bowl, and you'd go find a scribe. And so these bowls are 90% of them are written in two dialects of Hebrew. One is Jewish Aramaic, which is the majority of them. And the other is a dialect called Mandaean. And the Mandaeans are a very small Gnostic sect. And there's a discussion, I guess, over their origins. And I was originally going to write my master's thesis on that. And my thesis chair disagreed with my thoughts, which is that the Mandaean theology says they came from Palestine and then they moved eastward from persecution from the Jews or whatever, because they're the quote unquote real Jews, and John the Baptist is the good guy in Mandaean, and then Jesus was a bad guy and a usurper, and he tricked John the Baptist into baptizing him, and like all this kind of stuff. It's really interesting.
Oh, it is fascinating.
Actually. Yeah. And then the other school of thought is that no, they were already in, you know, the marshlands in Mesopotamia, and because they are so cloistered and Gnostic, nobody really knew they were there, and they're, you know, a brand of Manichaeism and this kind of stuff. So anyway,
and their iconography is just like so bright, so vivid. Yes. With the reds, and yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't mean to detract, sorry.
No. Like, no, I'll talk all day about Mandaeans. But yeah, so you have these bowls and you take them to a scribe, typically either Jewish or Mandaean. There are some bowls that are written in Syriac, which are typically Christian bowls. And then there are a far fewer number that are written in Arabic. And even the Syriac ones or Pahlavi ones are very rare. Mm-hmm. And I'd imagine because this is getting closer to the time when the bowls were stopped, but I don't know. That's my guess. So you take it to the scribe, and for, you know, you're, for example, like you have a headache, or, you know, or you're pregnant, or you're having issues with, you know, not, you know, staying pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so you go to the scribe and you're like, hey, this is my problem. And they're like, all right. And so the scribes have various, they'll riff on them sometimes, but there are probably like five or six like different spell formulae that are typically used. And typically it'll start out with the matronym, which is interesting. You know, it'll be, you know, Christina, son of, or daughter of Linda, right? It'll always like name the mother, which is right. Interesting because at that point they weren't doing that. They're, you know, the Jews were doing patrilineal stuff.
Right. And so, yeah. In fact, a lot of magical formula kind of floating around, it was based upon prayers, but it never really ever mentioned the person itself.
Yeah.
If they were meant to be passed along. So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's and interesting.
Like, yeah. And also the scribe doesn't necessarily have to be the same belief or in the same religion as a person commissioning the piece. Like they found in one of these digs that they did, they found some bowls that named the same person, you know, like, you know, so-and-so, you know, son of so-and-so, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they were written, a couple of them were written in Mandaic and a couple of them were written in Aramaic. And so like, who knows their religion, right? I find that quite interesting as well. And the Mandaean script will also use Jewish formulae, which is also very interesting. In the Jewish bowls, they typically they'll start at the rim and the writing will move in a spiral, usually counterclockwise, I believe. Because left-handed, yeah. So it'd be counterclockwise, and until it reaches like the bottom of the bowl, and usually at that point there's a drawing of some kind. and who the figures are in the drawings are still up for debate. Because even in the Jewish bowls, like, yes, it'll mention, you know, it'll quote biblical text or you know, or a get or something, which is a get is a divorce procedure within Judaism. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes if someone believes that, you know, they're being plagued by a demon, for example, the most common one is a get against Lilith. And so like, I divorce myself from this demon. So I divorce myself from sickness or from, you know, these things that are plaguing me.
Right.
And so there's been some work recently based on the iconography of the bowls, which I find fascinating. And that's how I got into it, is based on the iconography. And then the Mandaean bowls will also write inside the, it'll also be in a specific way, but they'll write it in three sections, like wedges. And then there'll also be like figures. A lot of times there's an Ouroboros. Sometimes it's just like animals, but often it's these weird sort of like human animal hybrid things that are usually pictured in fetters or otherwise bound in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And the belief is because most of them that have been found, in situ have been found overturned, and they've been found typically on the threshold of the home or in the corners. And so the idea is that it's forming some kind of a perimeter. And there have been some that have been found where the bed should have been, like within this home. And those are typically ones that talk about pregnancy and childbirth and like Lilith with a capital L.
Mm-hmm.
Like the personage of Lilith, like because she likes to come and steal babies away and whatever, according to the lore, right? And so the idea, the general thought is that by turning these upside down, if demons are coming from like the underworld, then they'll get caught in the bowl and they won't be able to come up. But there have been other bowls that have been found that are put together like rim to rim, and they're stuck together with like pitch and like rope or twine or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite interesting. No, as far as I know, like no one really knows what to make of these. But there have, you know, inside there, sometimes there's something inside of them. Sometimes it's like an eggshell or something like that. But there have been a number of them that have been found with either skull fragments or an entire skull.
So I know that was a very cruel place to insert a cliffhanger, and I apologize. In fact, you know, at the very end, she was saying that they found some skull fragments. Keep that in mind, because that story is going to get a whole heck of a lot more interesting in the second half. But again, I'm trying to keep these episodes to as close to 30 minutes as possible. I know that some people may want some, you know, longer ones, but I don't want to inflict my voice upon people for all that long. So, you know, bear with me, but part two will be coming up the very next week, so you don't have long to wait on that one. The one last thing I wanted to say is that I have been trying out this new Wisdom platform, which is a social audio platform, and there I have done one talk, which was introducing just the entire concept of what Southern demonology is, and it runs for about two and a half minutes, so it's a very short read. And further, I have also done a longer form talk, which was on Wednesday, December 22nd. And that one ran for about 25 minutes. And there I covered some future episode ideas that I had been considering. If you are interested, I am happy to turn these either into full episodes in and of themselves, or I can put them onto our YouTube channel and have them live there as well. So if you're curious, you know, you can always check out the Wisdom Talks. I have been thinking about if there is enough interest, then I could always do an after show on Wisdom or on another platform. I'm not wedded to any single one at this point. Or I could just do some general Q&A sessions. But the good thing about the Q&A is because Discord has been bumping up its live broadcast and interactability elements, I could also do it there as well. So if you're curious, if you're interested in either one of those avenues, please reach out and let me know. You can reach us on our website, on our Facebook page, on our Discord server, and actually on our YouTube channel. So anywhere you want to go, you can hit us up and let us know exactly what you would be interested in. As always, if you want to have some more interaction with the show, please feel free to join our Discord server. Or if you want to support the channel, please join our Patreon. There are several different layers, but if you'd like to get our content early or even have your name read at the end of each episode or shown up in lights on our YouTube channel, then more than happy to do either one of those. Anything to be able to pay you back for paying us to help actually run this channel. So, again, thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. Hope everyone out there has a wonderful holiday. And until next week, I'll see you then. Thank you for listening to Southern Demonology. Find us online at southerndemonology.com, where you can find all of our social and podcasting links. Also, if you have a moment, please feel free to rate this podcast and leave any encouraging feedbacks that you may have. As always, I am JJ, and it has been a pleasure getting to talk to you today.